All right, guys, welcome once again to your Adonis Lifestyle Podcast. I'm Brad Howard, and I've got John Barbin on the phone. And today we're actually interviewing Alan Elliott. And Alan is actually one of the gentlemen that's on our watch list. And he's got an interesting story because Alan actually used our stuff to participate in a bodybuilding contest. So he's got some interesting insights that he kind of wants to give us. And, you know, without further ado, I appreciate it, Alan.
Thanks, Brad.
All right. So me and Alan, before this call, were chatting a bit about what he did with the show. So I think this is going to be a bit of a unique case because Alan did a bodybuilding show separate of our contest, and I don't know that any of our other guys have done that. So Alan, can you just sort of walk guys through when you kind of stumbled across our stuff, and then how you sort of used it and to get ready for your show, and maybe give guys a bit of what it's like to go through a bodybuilding show, like an actual legitimate show, and how your training kind of differed from what maybe other guys did, even if you talked to other guys about their training at all, and maybe some of the techniques that you heard about for getting ready for a show, because everyone here is sort of interested in that stuff.
Okay, great. Yeah, just kind of starting off, I found the Adonis Effect program through fitnessblackbook.com earlier this year, probably around, you know, the February, March time frame. I had always been looking, you know, just for a different spin or take on fitness. You know, I was kind of losing motivation in the weight room. I didn't really feel like I was accomplishing anything after, you know, playing sports. It's kind of like, what else do you do for the rest of your life to look good and get in shape? And found the Adonis Effect through fitnessblackbook.com, and just kind of read the emails, listening to what John and Brad had to say, listened to a couple podcasts, and around the March, April time frame, one of my friends I trained with in the gym, she invited me to participate in the first show. It's a lady, so she was doing the figure category, but they combined with bodybuilding, and I said, man, I never did bodybuilding. It'd be kind of fun, you know. I had some free time, and I decided, you know, just take the plunge. Did a lot of research online. I hadn't purchased the Adonis Effect system just yet. And what really culminates, I guess, guys, we can call it the perfect storm, was John sent me the first week of the Adonis Effect. So I did it, and I loved it, man. I just started running with it. And then about 90 days away from my bodybuilding show, which was on July 24th, I made the decision to enter the bodybuilding contest. So I'd already been about 2 weeks in to the Adonis Effect and the Adonis Index workouts. And I really just liked the logic and thought process of it. So I ran with it. I carried the system all the way through. From about 9 days out, I finished, you know, this is the old Adonis. So I got through all 12 weeks, but I chose to stop my third month cycle and just run Rage. I ran Rage 2 weeks out from the bodybuilding competition. The reason I chose to do that was, you have something called glycogen deplete to make sure all the glycogen is kind of out of your system, kind of let you dry up, tighten up. And then on the day of the show, you want to restore that glycogen without spilling over. That can make a big difference between how you look. John and I were talking earlier. You know, a guy, he could look great in the morning and be completely washed out in the afternoon. So in conjunction with that, I just really took hold of the Adonis Effect for fitness for my actual workout program. I did that exclusively. And I followed a little bit of Brad Pilon's Eat, Stop, Eat. And then the stuff nutrition kind of helped cover all the other baselines. I was also kind of distracted or maybe even discouraged by what I read on the forums. You know, even going into like a bodybuilding.com forum, you would see things, but it's not applicable to the average guy. You know, majority of these people or the advice you might read is geared towards somebody who's running drugs. So that's why I felt, you know, safe just sticking with the Adonis concept. And going into the show, I felt confident. You know, I had the symmetry. You know, the Adonis system is looks-based training and not performance. And when you go into the show, it's all looks. That's what you're judged on. And those are some things I'm looking forward to in this open next year in January, guys. But that's about it. I don't know if you had anything else from that question.
Oh, no, that's good. And I like how you said there's a key thing you said there is browsing around on the bodybuilding forums. And you even yourself, you were, when you read the advice there and then you chose to follow our systems, It is a bit of a risk. I don't know what you say, a leap of faith, because it doesn't quite sound like what you'd hear on those forums. But like you said, a lot of that information is for guys running various types of drugs. And I don't doubt at all that it's likely that what they say there and what they do there probably works better for guys running drugs. Like maybe our system wouldn't work that well, or maybe there's something that's, you know what I mean, like better if you have some tests, if you have some insulin, if you have some GH, if you're running that stuff, maybe our systems don't work. I mean, they would probably work, but maybe the way those guys do it works better, right? So I see what you're saying. It's like, you're like, well, I'm not really working out the way they say. So I could, I mean, that's interesting that you'd be kind of sit there going, well, I got to make a choice here.
Yeah. The Adonis Effect is more geared towards natural bodybuilding because that is the most purest form of bodybuilding competition to this day. Even looking at the forums, you can see bodybuilding is the only sport where they have a natural category and then a drug. You don't see like a drug basketball and then a natural basketball category. So it can be confusing.
Yeah, yeah. That's a really good point. Could you imagine if we're going to the all-drug football game versus the non-drug football game?
Nobody would go to the non-drug football game.
Wouldn't be as much fun, right?
I wouldn't go. Here, check this out. This is really funny, but ever since I was reading this the other day, but ever since the big steroid hoopla came out with sports, attendance has been up ever since then. Mm-hmm. So it's like people know that people are on steroids, so they know that they're going to go see Freaks of Nature, so they want to go see it now.
Well, I mean, Pete, that's why you go to the circus, right? You see the freaks. Yeah. You don't want to go see the regular stuff.
Yeah, but that was pretty interesting to me that after reading about that, and you figured that, you know, after the whole steroid thing broke out, not in sports, and people were making a big deal out of it, that, you know, people would be kind of snobby and be like, I'm not going to watch. And so attendance would actually go down because people were disappointed. But that wasn't the case at all. It was actually the other way around.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah. So, well, that makes perfect sense. It's the spectacle, right?
Sure.
So, Alan, how'd the show go for you? And what, walk us through, like, the day of the show anyways.
Yeah.
Also, walk us through your prep towards the end, just the last few days.
Okay, great. Yeah, the show went well. The first thing was obviously deciding on a date for the show. That was the only one that was available during the summer, and I felt that 90 days gave me a lot of free time to, you know, make a lot of mistakes. I made a lot of mistakes. It was my first one. I listened to a lot of advice, but I just kept the grocery cart method. You know, if I liked it, great. If not, I just put it in my cart. If not, put it back on the shelf. Getting ready for the show was as much physical as it was mental. There was a lot of times when you had to eat, you know, at maintenance or below maintenance. And then sometimes, you know, just being honest, guys, I would binge. You know, I was just like, man, this sucks. I just want to eat whatever I want. But thankfully, I started, you know, further out that I was able to recover. I chose to come in the middleweight category. In the competition I was in, that starts at 176. I had a background in collegiate wrestling, so I wrestled at 174 in college. So I knew that I could get pretty leaned out at 176, but I hadn't been at that competing weight in almost 2 years. So getting back down to that weight was a stretch. Like I said, I ran Rage. Rage is great because it helped my muscle endurance, and that's very important when you're on stage. You know, you have to pose. Most people think you can just go on stage and bust a few poses out, but your whole body is tight the whole time. And, you know, you're tight, you're compact, and you don't want to relax because you don't know when any of those judges are looking at you. So running the Rage right before helped my muscular endurance as well as my posing routine. And just preparing for that about 2 days out, just to kind of get rid of any, fatigue or any lactic acid that might have built up, I read on the forum, this is something I tried to keep, but taking a ginger root bath, I took some ginger, cut it up in a sock, threw it in the bathtub as hot as I could stand. But it was actually really relaxing. And then the 2 days out from that, I kind of went on a water deplete, very little water. I just ate Jell-O just for substance. And I weighed in the day of the show. And after that, I went home, ate regular because I didn't have to worry about staying at that competing weight. So weighed in at 175, came in the next morning, probably about 177. still no water, very little. To keep my electrolytes, you know, within reason, I was drinking Pedialyte backstage. I wasn't really on my feet that much, just because you don't want to overpump your legs, because everything has to be tight when you go out on stage. And I felt that knowing my body best, starchy carbs kind of helped fill me back out. So I might have been tighter on the Friday, but on Saturday, going right into pre-judging, I was able to fill back out, but you don't want to spill over. So that was the risk I took on eating those starchy carbs so heavy in the morning.
Hmm. Oh, and spillover, for guys who don't know, that just means putting back carbs after not eating them for a while, and then spilling over meaning it smooths out your look and kind of wrecks all your definition.
Yeah.
So and you kept saying that, and I know what you meant, but I'm just making sure guys understand that too. Okay. So that's basically when people carb deplete and then reload. For some reason, some guys, it works fine for bloating the muscle up, and for other guys, it actually somehow it does a subcutaneous thing under the skin where they just look kind of smooth and watery. And yep. I know Pilon tried that during one of his shows, and it actually flattened them out. And it's just person to person. I don't know that there's like a specific rule. It's just for some people, it either works or it doesn't. And I guess the problem is for first timers, they end up finding it their first show if they spill over or not. And then the unfortunate thing is the day of the show, they might look smooth, and then they wake up Sunday morning in good enough shape to win. And they're like, oh man, I missed it by 12 hours.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. So go ahead.
No, I was going to say, it's just interesting to hear that, you know, the endurance part of it and actually using rage to actually help out with the endurance of being on stage and things like that. I mean, that's something I would have never thought of. So that's actually really, really, really interesting.
Yeah. I don't think, like you said, I wouldn't have considered how much of a grind it is up there. And like you said, you don't know when the judges are looking. So you want to be as tight as possible. You know, I've been to shows and tell me this, guys in the crowd, right? Like your buddies are shouting, like keep the legs tight, keep the abs tight, like all the time.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, it's crazy.
Yeah.
People don't realize numbers, poses, positions.
Yeah, people don't realize how vocal your training partners are in the crowd. Everyone's yelling, like, tighten up the legs, tighten up the tighten up something. Because if you're up there and you're like, you're huffing and puffing, you're tired, but you let it go smooth, then you just look like, you don't look like anything until you tighten back up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, sounds like the Price is Right, you know.
It is. Oh, dude, a bodybuilding show is just like that. The entire crowd, because everyone in the crowd is like, is the posse and the partners of somebody on stage, and everyone's, because when you're on stage, you don't know what you look like. Like you're not, there's no mirror. You're just hoping you're in proper position. Right. And so your buddies in the crowd can tell. They're like, oh no, you're letting your legs go too lax. Tighten them up. You're letting your abs go too lax. Oh, explain to us how you learn how to pose.
Oh yeah. That's a great point. About 10 weeks out from the show, again, my friend, Michelle, she helped me out. She took me or invited me to a posing workshop, and I partnered up with a natural pro bodybuilder. His name is Rodney Hilaire. His website is rhfitness.com. He's out of Savannah, Georgia, so he came up to the middle Georgia area, hosted a posing workshop. We went over all the mandatory poses. He explained to us the posing rounds, and then he gave us some tips and guidance as far as how to practice. So I took those tips home from that posing workshop. And I've developed a routine. You know, I would do the Adonis Effect workouts in the morning. And then when I got home after work, I would, you know, take a break, maybe 30 minutes, hour, chill out. And then I'll do a pre-pump up. And then I'll hit my posing routine that consists of maybe 30 to 45 minutes, just, you know, in front of the mirror, flexing, holding all the poses. And about 2 weeks away from the show, I weaned off of the mirror because, again, like John and Brad said, there's no mirror on stage, so you don't know what you're doing. So just to kind of wean off of the mirror so you wouldn't be looking for it on stage, that was the biggest change that I made in my posing prep.
Mm-hmm. You have to get to the point where you know what it looks like without looking at it.
Yeah, that mind-muscle connection really is enhanced. And then even, I feel like it even enhanced my workouts because when I go through the week, I'm like, okay, you know, this Adonis workout is heavy shoulders, so I was focused on visualizing what my shoulders are going to look like, what my back's going to look like, you know, curls, you know, just visualizing that and then remembering what the poses actually feel like. So that mind-muscle connection is really strengthened during that posing prep.
Mm-hmm. And that's an interesting thing. In the podcast I did with my buddy Dover, Dr. Jeff Dover, he said that there's even research on being able to train the muscles you can see better than the muscles you can't see, because you can create that mind-muscle connection by seeing it in the mirror. So it seems as though when you're looking at yourself doing curls or doing anything you can see in the mirror, you seem to be able to flex that muscle better than, for instance, just doing back, like lat pull-downs, because you can't see it. So I try to tell guys, it's kind of a weird thing, but I say put your awareness in the muscle. So try to think from the muscle.
Okay.
Think of what it feels like. Same thing that you were saying, like make that connection. Think of what the muscle feels like and then feel it contracting. And that's the, you know, when I was on the powerlifting team, they taught me to not squat facing the mirror, but squat facing back into the gym and just feel your legs. Like don't look, feel. And I was like, yeah. And that, and over time you learn to know what it feels like. And ironically, you need to see the muscle to make the connection, but then you need to be able to do it without looking at it. Like you were saying, like no mirror, just on stage.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, those are some pretty good points. Okay, and then, so you ran Rage Up and before the show, and again, like you said, that was in the summer, and then you entered, you had an interesting point about entering our contest. Obviously, you ended up on the watch list, because your before was pretty good too. So, I mean, your final look is great, and you'll be great in the open. But again, this was a transformation contest, and you went from looking great to looking great. But explain what you did for that then.
Yeah, I had always wanted. Well, I've been in contact with Brad, you know, through Twitter and Facebook. But you know, just as a token of my appreciation, I felt like I was obligated to enter the transformation contest. I knew going in that I always agreed with you guys' philosophy of staying within striking distance. So even after the show, I didn't go completely crazy. I probably fluctuated from, you know, 176, I went all the way back up to maybe 190, 195, and then I kind of tailored back down. But when I heard of the announcement of the Adonis Transformation Contest, I felt really confident in being able to really just focus on AI. I didn't have to worry about the poses anymore. I could, you know, focus solely on the workouts and tailoring what my shoulder-to-waist ratio would be. One thing I did realize, though, is that I was getting to a sticking point in my waist where it wasn't going to go below 30 inches, but my actual water weight could keep dropping, which would cut or hurt my shoulders. You know, my shoulders could go down lower than what I wanted them to. So at the end of the day, the last month, the first two months of just, you know, hitting the gym, getting ready, the last month was all water management. What body weight do I look the best at? What body weight are my shoulders mostly filled out? Because my waist was pretty much intact. So from there, I took the same philosophy and I ran Rage again 2 weeks out, from the end of the transformation contest. Took a hit again on my shoulders. I started out at 48.75 and I lost an inch and a quarter about 2 weeks before the show. But the interesting thing to know is my competing weight in July was 176, but my weight that I took my photo that was 182. So I'm actually closer to my AI at a heavier weight than I was at that lower weight.
Interesting.
Those are some of the things that I experienced. I kind of charted it. My calorie count, I kind of ate the same thing, ate pretty clean. I would diet down hard Monday through Friday and just, you know, kind of relax Saturday, Sunday. But my cardio increased. Cardio increased a little bit, and I believe that probably is what hurt my shoulder loss. Maybe the cardio, because I was actually training for a military PT test, so I had to keep running. But I felt that the Adonis, you know, workouts would sustain that, and I wouldn't take a huge loss on my shoulders.
That's interesting. You had two things running there. How much extra cardio were you adding? Because most guys, you know, don't really know what to do about that.
I would say. I'm kind of a freak because my goal is always to be functional. I never really wanted to be a massive guy. I just was kind of going for, you know, what Rusty talked about, that Hollywood look, where you can look good all the time, man, you know, 24/7. But to be totally honest with you, I was running probably 2 to 3 days a week in excess of 5 miles. So that's why my calorie count was higher. And just to tell you why I was doing that, I was training for Air Force PT test. It's a 1.5-mile run, but I had to get my cardio aerobic threshold above that, so I had to run extra. And then on top, I would do speed drill workouts, you know, workouts on the track, 200, 400 meter repeats to get that anaerobic threshold there so I could sustain that, you know, that long pace.
Mm-hmm. So you're doing
my cardio. Mm-hmm.
Right. So you had a lot of extra cardio that, a lot of guys probably wouldn't be aware of or think of doing.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Totally unnecessary.
Totally unnecessary for the look, you're saying.
Yes, yes.
But you had to do it. Oh, well, you just, you know, just do what you got to do, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so let's map out kind of how you ate. I mean, you said you were eating clean, but just kind of overall, what were some of the things that you kind of found that helped you out? I mean, obviously you talked about that you binge a couple of times, and
yeah.
that's nothing new. But you know, what were some of the kind of protective measures that you found for yourself that kind of worked? Maybe some of the mindset tweaks that you did, some of the foods that you had to keep out of the house because they just be cancerous to you. You know, some of the things like that.
Absolutely. Really, I felt like I got most of the bugs worked out. My binging heavily came from getting ready to do my bodybuilder show in July. And what triggers I found there was either not drinking enough water. Like, my goal was to get to a gallon of water a day. But at nighttime, I felt like I'll binge. So it was either, A, I didn't drink enough water during the day, or B, I had maybe missed a meal somewhere. And my body was craving something that I missed, you know, from a vitamin or a nutrient standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
And what I felt to help compensate that was getting sugar-free Jell-O, because, you know, it's nighttime. You're not going to try to get a meal. So rather than reaching for carbs when you're, like, half asleep and it's, like, oh, dark 30, you just pop a Jell-O. You know, it kind of fills you up. It's water, you know, only 10 calories, and I go back to sleep. So it pretty much came down to, if it wasn't in the house, I wasn't going to eat it.
Right.
And throughout the week, I would, again, Monday through Friday was when I was strict. Saturday, Sunday, I would ease up. Throughout the week, Monday through Friday, I would have a workout from maybe 7 to 8. And I felt better if I did not eat at least 90 minutes, 2 hours after the meal. I felt like, you know, my blood level was up, or maybe my GH, human growth hormone, was elevated. So I was trying to milk that fat burning. And then I come in, maybe do like a light protein shake, maybe a, you know, some oatmeal with some egg whites. And then for lunchtime, I would, carve up a little more and go with some like flatbread or some tortilla wraps, but everything was high fiber. I was trying to shoot for at least, you know, 20 to 30 grams of fiber. And then in the afternoon, depending on the day, this is really important. On my leg days, I would always carve up in the afternoon. But if it was a traditional, you know, just upper body, I would carve down. So I would eat oatmeal twice in that day. Just, I felt like I felt more sustained. And then if it was just a regular lift, it wasn't legs, I wasn't doing cardio, I would just eat something, maybe like a salad with tuna and egg whites, closer to 7 to 9. And I'll try to let that be my last meal. My snacks throughout the day was, just like Quaker rice cakes, 100 calorie packs. And about 6 to 10 weeks out from the actual show, I did this twice, from the bodybuilding show and from the Adonis Transformation Contest, I eliminated all fruit, dairy, cheese, milk. And that was kind of tough, but my cousin, he's a bodybuilder in North Carolina, he was telling me that cheese, dairy, yogurt, fruit, that'll help sustain you in between bodybuilding shows. But when you actually are trying to peak and look your best, that stuff is going to keep you smooth. You know, you'll be big, but you won't be dry and hard. So you got to start that weaning out process. And this is what I did for me, at least 6 to 10 weeks out. And that really helps get all that, you know, water stuff out, help you get ripped. And then if you want to run a diuretic, that was completely optional, just depending on how you look.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's interesting. Everyone else had some kind of similar thing where they tightened it up towards the end. And a lot of guys had a similar thing where they their diet was a job, so to speak, from Monday to Friday. That's where like the heavy lifting for the diet was done, and everyone seemed to tighten up or loosen up on the weekends too. It seems to be a consistent thread. Almost everyone was doing something to like somewhat similar to that.
Yes.
You got to stay sane, right? You can't be 7 days a week
entire
12 weeks. Yeah, I don't know how anyone would actually do that every single day. I had a couple of buddies who bodybuilded and did a couple shows, and they actually, every now and then he would just be like, I'm ordering an entire pizza right now. I'm like, really? He's like, yeah, just have to do it. All right. If you have to, you have to.
How about I help you out with those calories? I'll take two slices of
green. Yeah, I'm doing this for you for every slice I ate. Yeah, this isn't for me. This is for you.
This is for you, bud. Yeah. That's funny. Yeah, I remember we used to, way back in the gym biz, we would have member appreciation days and stuff like that. And, you know, it was always easy to get pizza because pizza is very cheap to make. So the local pizza joints would just give it to us, right? You know, in order to get it in there for advertising, we'd have like 20 pizzas in there, man. And people be passing by and all pissed off at us because we got pizza in the gym. And they're like, man, I'm trying to cut up. This sucks. Mm-hmm.
It's so tempting.
Oh, it was awful. It was awful. I was like, we're totally just wrecking these guys' days. Mm. You know, cause they come in wanting some type of sanctuary from the day and to get some stuff done. And now next thing you know, there's like just loads of pizza in front of them and it was great. But, oh man. So what were some of the other things that you kind of found out? I guess one of the things I'm kind of curious about is we're starting to talk a little bit more about the last 10 and some of the things that kind of happened. Let's talk about this. Before you really got within striking distance, were you heavier or what was your biggest I don't want to say problem but challenge? Was it more building muscle or was it dropping fat?
It was dropping fat, mainly around my waistline.
Okay. And where did that get up to?
My waistline?
Uh-huh.
Probably started off at about 34, and then I was able to get back. For me, striking distance is 32, uh-huh. And I realized that at 30 inches was when my waist pretty much, I'm not going to lose any more there. I was taking a heavier hit on my shoulders. So that just required me to be clean, meaning like I couldn't graze throughout the day. I had to actually like strategically plan my meals.
Uh-huh.
And kind of using Brad Pilon's eat, stop, eat philosophy, that kind of helped carry over that caloric deficit where, you know, fat burning was taking place.
Right. So at what point did you notice that your waist measurement kind of detached from the amount of
weight
that you had lost? Yeah.
Okay, that's a good question. And that probably gets back into striking distance. Like anything for me over, I try to walk around 190. Anything over 190 is when, anything over 190 is when I start to kind of really let myself go. But somewhere in that 185 to 188 window is when the waistline really starts to detach and you start to look, you know, sharp. And a good example is, you know, you can look good in the morning, but by the afternoon, you could just be kind of smooth out again. But when I was getting down into the lower 180s, I looked great in the morning, and then I still looked good in the afternoon. So I knew that's whenever it was starting to come together for me.
Mm-hmm. And there's not really a fluctuation on the scale at that point between the two looks.
Oh, no. We're talking maybe less than 1 pound difference, morning and night.
Yep. Yeah, that's kind of what I'm looking for is because, you know, what we're finding is like there's a certain point where that 5 pounds per inch of waist that a lot of guys and I've seen, John's seen, and even guys in the forum have seen that. But there's a certain like waist level where that completely it becomes irrelevant. And you know we're trying to figure out at what that point is because you get to a point where you know your waist gets to let's say my waist is 32 right now.
Okay.
Anything below 32. So if I wanted to get down to a 31, it wouldn't be another 5 pounds. It might only be another 2 pounds or something like that. So that's kind of what I was looking for is at what point did, you know, that big kind of overriding rule, you know, at what point did that really slide in? Was that more or less about the same point maybe? So I guess you were saying 30 was your kind of goal waist.
How tall are you?
Yeah, how tall?
5'11".
Yeah, so your goal waist is somewhere between 30 and 31-ish or something?
Yeah, right about there.
Yeah, right about 31. Yeah, you're same height as me. So, yeah, so probably right at 32, if I'm listening to you correctly, right at 32 is right when it kind of started to detach, and maybe an inch above what your golden waist would be.
Yes.
Would be where that math kind of comes apart.
That's true.
Okay. So, and if it's a different number, I mean, let me know. Like I say, we're trying to kind of feel this out so we kind of can give an idea of what's going to happen, because obviously, you know, one of the things that guys are talking about over and over again is, you know, once you get down to the last, you know, 2 inches on your waist, it starts to be a pain in the ass.
Oh yeah.
And, you know, and so what we're trying to do is trying to kind of give kind of future project for guys so they understand what they're getting ready to get into. And that, cause it's kind of scary. I mean, heck, it's scary enough when you're sitting at 190 and then you drop down to 180 and you're like, holy shit, man, my waist isn't there yet. I got another 2 inches to go. Does that mean I got another 10 pounds? Does that mean I'm going to rock into 160s?
Mm-hmm.
And you're already shook enough because you thought you're going to weigh more. So I guess that's kind of what I'm looking for is, you know.
What did you do to maintain, I don't know if you already said it, but when your waist is getting that tight and you're like, okay, there's just nowhere else to go on the waist and you don't want to take a hit on the shoulders, what do you do to try to maintain, try to keep the mass in your shoulders while you've got your waist down?
Yeah, it really just came back down to water management.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, cause water is life. So water can make or break your show too. water management became really important. So I would weigh myself in the morning and I would weigh myself in the afternoon. And then I would just look at myself in the mirror. So going back to that mind muscle connection, like you get so involved in the posing, the lifts that I could just look at myself and be within a pound or half a pound of what I weighed before I even stepped on the scale. It even turned into a game. So then I would use that number. Okay, like I said, I stepped on the scale, I was 186. Then I think about, well, how much water did you drink today at the end of the day? How tight is your skin? And when was your last measurement? And that's kind of what I did to stay within maintenance. So I said, okay, I look good now. I'm at 184. And I know my waist isn't going to go down anymore. So how low, this is probably the answer. How low can I go in my actual weight poundage without taking a hit on my shoulders, knowing that my waist wasn't going to change? Does that make sense?
That makes perfect sense because, okay, like we just said, the waist detaches from the weight.
Yep.
And then you know that I can't actually make my waist any better here or smaller. All I know is all I'm going to do is destroy my shoulder mass by trying to go any lower.
Exactly. And that's why I chose to go. That's why I chose to weigh in heavier at 182, 6 pounds heavier than my bodybuilding competition weight. Cause I knew if I lost those 6 pounds, I was taking a gamble. I knew I wasn't going to lose it on my waist. I was probably going to lose it on my shoulders. So I just chose to stay big.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like I say, it's interesting. We kind of trying to map this whole thing out, and it's just fun, to be honest. I mean, at least on my end, because we kind of get to see the big battlefield, you know, with everybody and seeing what everybody's going through and notice the themes and the underlying currents of everything. So, you know, I think this is really interesting stuff, man.
So go ahead.
No, I was going to ask, what other kind of insights did you have? I mean, just as far as your personal life and things like that. I mean, obviously we talked about the bodybuilding shows, but I mean, you know, ever since you've kind of decided to jump in and kind of get in with this philosophy, I mean, has anything changed, you know, either with the way you viewed yourself or, you know, even some of the things that other people may have said, both positive and negative, you know, some of those hurdles that you might have had to overcome socially?
Yeah, that was a really good question. I had confidence in the workout and my personal, you know, self-esteem. But I was really overconscious about how my friends and family would react to me doing a bodybuilding show.
Mm-hmm.
Just because, you know, you got different mantras and philosophies out there. But I was like, man, I'm going to go ahead and do it. But I really just kind of kept it close-knit. I only told maybe a handful of friends who I knew wouldn't like blab. I didn't put it on Facebook. And I just told, you know, friends and family. And then after going through the show, I really wish I would have chosen more people or told more people. But then I said, well, you know, I'll just have a testament. And I released some photos on Facebook, kind of told people about the competition. And that really was kind of like coming out of my shell because I got a lot of props. You know, you always have haters because, you know, you put in the work, they did it, and they're just hating on you. But I got a lot of positive feedback and maybe even some unwanted attention.
Yeah.
So yeah. It was been fun, man. Great, great. I was a total transformation. You know, that's how you sum it up.
Okay, and walk us through how did you train before us?
That's a very good point. Like, you know, growing up in high school, middle school, I kind of started lifting weights, and it was all geared towards performance, you know, athletic performance. And I guess the big philosophy back then was, you know, bigger, faster, stronger. You're just a kid growing up. You don't really have anywhere to compare yourself to, like, oh, I can bench more than you, I can squat more than you. But what was the goal? You know, was that the goal, just to be able to go in the gym and lift more weights? It was to help perform for a sport. And I was really frustrated with it because I wasn't always like the biggest and strongest, but I felt like I looked better than them because, you know, I kind of dieted well. I watched what I ate and I really enjoyed the workouts. It was beyond performing for the sport. I actually like enjoyed lifting weights. And, after kind of stepping out of that athletic realm, I kind of got, you know, distracted or even disenchanted working out. I was like, why am I going to the gym now? Like, what am I trying to achieve? I even thought it was cool to start deadlifting. So at the end of December of 2009, I was deadlifting really heavy. But I had poor technique, so I actually hurt my back. And that's when I stumbled upon fitnessblackbook.com because I really like their philosophy. Like, you don't have to come in and lift the house to look good. You know, if you want to train, this is how you train. And then that's when I found you guys with your Adonis Effect. Like, it just makes sense, you know. This is the ultimate goal to reach for. You're going to lift your best, and everything else is a byproduct. You're going to have the health, the stamina, and the strength, but this is actually a measurable goal. You can walk in the gym and ask anybody, why are you in here? What's your goal? But they couldn't tell you. You ask me, I say, hey, I'm shooting for 1.6. This is my shoulder measurement. This is my waist measurement, and this is the workout I'm doing today. So it just gave me a definite purpose and something to shoot for, you know, just a kind of like a lifestyle, the Adonis lifestyle.
Yeah. You know, what's funny is that Mark Twain said there are two reasons a man will do something. The reason he'll tell you he did it and the real reason. So
that's awesome. I like that. And most guys in the gym aren't telling you.
Yeah, they're not going to tell you that. They're not going to say, yeah, I'm doing it to look good. They're like, oh, yeah, I'm working on to peak my bicep. Like, okay.
Yeah, whatever. We just called the collective fitness industry, everybody who's working out's bluff. We're like, I know why you're here, and it's not to be able to do curls standing on a Swiss ball. It's because you want to – the functional training is a load of BS. You're here because you want to look good. That's why.
Yeah.
And you know what the best part about it? I think you said it best too, John. Back when you were in Florida, didn't you have some? You had some input with the guys on the basketball team back when they won the national title or whatever.
Oh yeah, yeah, and the beach workout.
Yeah,
yeah. The trainer. Yeah, oh, this is great for the Florida Gators basketball team. The trainer had a bunch. Their team trainer had a bunch of functional stuff he wanted them to do, which makes perfect sense for a top level basketball team because they need to be functional. It's not about looking good. It's about being functional, and they hated the functional training, right? And so what he did was he treated them to a bicep and chest workout if they got through their functional training. So they called it the beach. So so he had to cut a deal with these guys. He had to cut a deal with his players. He's like, look, if you guys get through the functional training half, you can do your biceps and chest and shoulder workout. And they called that the beach. And that's when they perked right up because they're like, no, we want big arms and big chest. We don't care about like all the jump training and all the agility training. Like, 'cause that stuff doesn't make you look any better. It just makes you perform better. And they're like, I don't want to look good. 'Cause you got to remember, these are still 18-year-old guys, 19-year-old guys. They want to be the man. They want to look good. They don't care if they're functional. Yeah. And so even them, they're, you know, and the trainer knew it. He's like, oh man, they just want to look better. So I'll let them do their bodybuilding. But you know, he's like, for me, I get paid to make them perform. But even them, they get the difference. They're like, yeah, you know, I'm a top level athlete, but I don't care. I want to look good.
Yeah, that's kind of the funny dichotomy is that the people that are supposed to be doing that stuff don't want to do it. They'd rather do the stuff like we're talking about. But the people that aren't supposed to be doing that stuff
want to do it.
Yeah, want to do that or think they should be.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, like why is the average gym rat doing like functional training? What are you doing? For what? Your rec softball league? Like, come on, seriously.
Yeah.
It's just funny, man. But
anyways, that's enough for ripping on functional training. So, Alan, where are you headed from now, here on in? What program are you following? Like, where are you in the program, or what's your plan? And I'm assuming you're doing the open, right?
Oh, totally. I'm in it to win it.
Oh, Lord.
Yep.
I took Thanksgiving off. You know, I ate good. I was, you know, home for the holidays, so I didn't want to skip there. And getting back into it, I'm in week two of the Adonis Strength Endurance.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm kind of – I'm not as heavy cardio because I took my military PT test. That's water under the bridge. So now I'm going to really focus more on the actual lifts and less cardio. And right now I'm kind of running a two-day split. Like, today's Wednesday, so I lifted Monday, Tuesday. I took today off, and I'll come back in Thursday, Friday. And I might do a day of cardio just so I don't go Saturday, Sunday dormant, you know, completely no activity.
Mm. And then you're running, so you're just going to run 3.0 from now till the show?
Yes.
Okay.
And then if I have to, you know, change the game plan, it would only be maybe within the last 2 weeks, maybe just offload wherever I'm at and run raids and then, you know, tighten up.
Which raids do you do? The pyramids, or do you do different ones?
I only got into the pyramids. I haven't even touched the Fibonacci, there's another one, right?
Oh no, the Fibonacci pyramids are that one, but the progressive supersets are the next one.
Yeah, I have not gotten to those yet. I might switch off and do that.
I think for a glycogen deplete, that one will hit you even harder.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean the time sets are nasty too.
Yeah. I don't know which ones. But I think the progressive are the worst, but
yeah.
And by worst, by worst I mean probably the best. I don't know what the word is.
No, worst is good.
Yeah.
So, well, that's funny. Like I said, do you got anything else that? I guess we've pretty much come kind of to the end of this thing. I mean, we could drag this thing out and kind of.
No, that's pretty good. I mean, those were pretty good insights, I guess. Alan, what would you? I mean, do you have any? I don't know, a tip or two for everyone you'll be competing against for guys getting ready. A mistake that you made at your show that you maybe learned to correct for the Adonis transformation that you'd pass along to everyone else.
Yeah. As far as mistakes go, just make them early as possible. so you have time to recover. You know, I always had a good attitude and a good work ethic, but if you're getting started, you probably want to have an accountability partner. Somebody you know that's going to be at the gym, or somebody who's going to keep you accountable to your goals and even your diet. You know, the diet is everything, because that's going to determine the majority of how you look. The only other thing I would recommend is if it's not in the house, you know, you probably won't eat it. And just depending on your lifestyle, that might be easier or harder for you. But just have a contingency plan. Like what I found worked for me again was rather than reaching for a quick snack late at night, just have a snack there that's not going to set you back as far.
Mm-hmm. So instead of cookies, just have some apples around, and at least you know when you have that craving, you'll just grab an apple instead.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. That's good. Yeah. That's good advice.
Yeah, not bad at all. Not bad at all. Well, like I say, man, this has been a really interesting interview, man. I really appreciate you being on. John, you got anything else you want to touch on?
No, that was great.
Cool, man.
Thanks,
all right, guys. Yeah, no problem, man. All right, guys. Well, for John Barber, I'm Brad Howard, and that's your Adonis Lifestyle Podcast.